In this episode of the Tech Stack, it's the great memory shortage crisis of 2025 and soon to be 2026. Next on the Tech Stack. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, to another fine episode of the Tech Stack. With me is the incomparable Jim McGregor. How you doing from Tyrius Research?
Doing great, Dave. Thanks.
And the always festive Mark Vina from Smart Tech Research. Good to see you, Mark.
Hello, David. How are you? Good morning.
I'm doing well. Season's greeting, fellas. I've got my little Charlie Brown Christmas tree in the background here. But, I tell you what, season's greetings for folks. The greetings in certain markets are not so cheerful. We're here to unpack today what has been an impending memory shortage crisis to now we're in the thick of it, memory shortage crisis, and it's beginning to impact virtually all markets, from the data center to smartphones, PCs, game consoles, you name it, anything that consumes memory. And it's all driven by the insatiable beast that is AI. Let's just get that right out in the open now. That is a workload that is unprecedented, consumes gobs of memory, both system memory, HBM, what have you, and storage memory for large language models and the like. So let's unpack this and go through the puts and takes and sort of the pain and anguish, I guess, that is upon us now. And that, you know, let's maybe see if we can project into the future when this thing will hopefully ease. I don't know. Jim, let's start with you. I know you've had your finger on the pulse of this for a while now. What are your thoughts? We're hearing folks like Micron getting out of consumer branded memory in favor of the data center. SK Hynix really, you know, screaming for uncle as well, in pain with shortages. What do you know? What can you tell us? And then we'll dive a little deeper.
Well, thanks, Dave. And I would say the Grinch is pulling out all the stops on this one. You know, normally we have this transition period where we have these shortages going from one generation to the next. This is kind of unique in the fact that the data center is driving demand both on the storage side and the memory side, as you indicated, but also it caused a monumental shift in the strategy of the major memory vendors, particularly SK Hynix, Micron, and Samsung. Back in March, all these guys, well, first off, you know, kind of dating back a little bit, Samsung had a problem qualifying for HBM3E, and that really opened the door to SK Hynix to really crank up production and everything else, and for Micron, which has the most efficient memory solutions out there right now, but has limited capacity. But back in March, all these guys looked up and said, okay, well, the demand for HBM3E and the future demand for HBM4 is going to be so great with both AMD accelerators, NVIDIA accelerators, and other accelerators requiring this kind of memory, that we want to focus just on those markets. So all three of the major players said, we're going to stop manufacturing DDR4, just focus on DDR5 and HBM. That was a monumental shift. That automatically sent DDR4 prices skyrocketing, doubling, and by the fall, quadrupling, and even more now. Now, there are a lot of other smaller memory vendors, and there's Chinese vendors, but some of those can't get qualified for some of the applications like Miller and stuff like that that require qualifications. So it's left the market kind of in this lurch where there's not enough demand, there's not enough capacity for DDR4, and all the big guys have shifted to DDR5. And we almost thought that there was going to be a glut there in maybe the beginning of 2026, especially as we saw the shift to HBM4. Now it doesn't look that way. Now they're on allocation for HBM3E and HBM4, you know, going great guns just to support this data center build out for AI. And now that's impacting everything. I mean, we've even seen a lot of the customers from PC vendors and everything else stop actually cancel orders because they've seen the spot prices or their contract prices increase so much that they just can't justify it.
Yeah, crazy stuff. You know, it used to be, you know, I'm thinking back in the I'm going to date myself a little bit on this one, but it used to be back in the 90s, late 90s, DRAM supply demand dynamics were such that if the DRAM suppliers, you know, didn't like the way prices were softening, there was excess inventory in the market, somebody was dumping, you know, they cut back on a few wafer starts and tighten things up a little bit, you know, help the price points out a little bit, you know, and there was that kind of dynamic. And it was kind of, it wasn't necessarily disclosed that way, but we all knew how the strings were being pulled behind the scene with the major memory suppliers. These days, it's wild. And AI is consuming gobs of HBM memory, higher end memory, let's face it, higher margin memory, and storage as well. And you know, when it comes to data center, it's all higher margin business. So it's a really sort of tough thing to look away from as a major memory supplier, not to enjoy that juicy data center business with the higher margins based on the insatiable demand from AI right now. So it is a wild dynamic to watch. It's something that I don't think we've seen in the market, this kind of dynamic in a very long time, maybe ever.
I can't recall ever seeing this. I mean, I usually tell people that we have, if you're looking at the semiconductor market, it's going to go through two cycles for every cycle in the general economy. And if you're looking at the memory market, it's going to go through two cycles for every semiconductor cycle. But we've never seen a situation here where memory's been so out of whack. And it takes 2 to 3 years to get this new capacity up and running. So we're kind of stuck for 2026 and 2027.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Micron, just in their you know, recent earnings announcement, just coming right out and saying, hey, look, we're focusing on data center. That's where the demand is. And, you know, we're you know, de-emphasizing consumer branded stuff. And it's just, it's a wild dynamic that you have to follow the dollars. I mean, you can't blame any of these major players. They're going to follow the profitable, higher margin business in the data center. Mark, let's bring you in on this. What are your thoughts? What are you hearing? What does this mean for consumer products? You know, I mean, the squeeze is sort of universal everywhere, right?
Yes. Yeah, so actually, you know, calling this a Charlie Brown Christmas is probably not an inaccurate characterization. And to your point, Dave, consumer type products like smartphones, especially laptops, we'll probably talk about laptops for a bit, they're really going to be impacted. Now, you know, memory is a very supply chain oriented capability. And you could argue that about anything that goes into the BOM of a notebook, for example, has a supply chain component to it. So a lot of the product that will be sold this holiday season has been in the pipeline. You've got a forecast, you know, months and months in advance. They probably have got that memory at a little bit less expensive pricing than the memory prices that you see right now. But if you're a PC supplier, for example, a Dell, for example, might actually, you know, wiggle through this situation better than a Lenovo or an HP, because a big portion of Dell's business is direct. And when you're direct, of course, you can do all kinds of things in terms of trying to squeeze, you try to cut costs in other places of the BOM to make up for increases in prices on storage. There's some great market research out there that says that, you know, you're even seeing notebook suppliers kind of lowering the feature set on other parts of the notebook to make up for these memory increases. Whereas an HP or a Lenovo, which does a lot of their consumer volume through retail, where you have to price that in advance. So as a result, I'm not sure, you know, consumers are gonna see the kind of typical deals they would see during the holiday season. So the PC guys, I think, are really gonna feel this. It's gonna be interesting to see the kind of average price points that are sold this holiday season. And I suspect there is going to be some surprise from a lot of consumers. And just to go a bit forward, because and we'll talk about this, this situation, which I think is unprecedented, there's probably not going to be relief for many, many, many months, probably deep into 2026. Now, you like to believe that by the end of the year, things will sort itself out. But just to use Apple as an example, you know, Apple, you know, there are all kinds of rumors that Apple's going to get into the foldable space at some time. And that probably will happen during the latter part of next year, because I don't think they can stay in that market for long. But the rumors around price points on a foldable iPhone, even without the memory increases, have been talked about around $2,500 for an entry level foldable phone. So if you add all this memory noise into the situation, can you? I could see a $3,000 iPhone foldable phone. So it's going to be a crazy situation, but consumers are likely to feel this pinch from a price point standpoint very quickly. And again, I think, Dave, you nailed it. You know, the suppliers are always going to go where the margin is, and the margin right now is on feeding that beast called the data center.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting dynamic for sure with respect to pricing, Mark. I think you touched on something there. The supply chain resilience is going to be key here. And OEMs that can forecast and budget, like Dell, for example, as you noted, will be better off. They'll weather this storm better. But I wonder what it's going to do. You know, I think the market, you know, from a product standpoint, consumer products, let's just say, let's talk about that iPhone you just spoke of. The market has a price point it can bear. And then there's a point at which consumers just don't buy. They don't pull the trigger. And so I think there's also a dynamic to this, and it's been rumored about. I don't think we've heard any confirmation on this. I think TrendForce had a forecast on it, some data on this, some analytics on this that they're looking at projecting. But there's also the dynamic of OEMs cutting back on specs. So in other words, instead of having the baseline 4 gig of memory in an iPhone or 8 gig or whatever that configuration might be at a very entry level product, and then scaling up to a 16 gig configuration, perhaps we'll have less, perhaps have less choice in that regard. And so I wonder what that does to the product launches that are coming here at CES right around the corner. You've got major notebook suppliers. You know, we know Intel's coming with Panther Lake. What's this going to do to the configuration side of things for optionality in the consumer space? Jim, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, the one aspect here that we have to think about is the fact that everyone's trying to push AI on device. So on one hand, you're saying, okay, well, I'll just reduce the memory. On the other hand, you're saying, well, when I can't run the AI apps that I just developed or that I'm promoting to run on that device, well, there's good a point. Smartphone or a PC or anything else. So, I mean, it's created a choke point farther on down the line or farther up the stack towards the consumer. And that's going to be a hard sell. You know, how do you, especially if you've already promoted to your enterprise customers, oh, we've got these AI ready PCs for you or these AI ready smartphones. You know, they're not going to be willing to, in a lot of cases, to pay a higher price and or take a lower requirement if it's not going to run the applications, if it's not going to be future proof to run those AI applications that they want. So I think this is devastating. And, you know, when we talk about consumer, but you got to remember the vast majority of semiconductors go into embedded or industrial applications.
Right.
We're talking a couple hundred million devices for PCs. We're talking billions of devices when you think about refrigerators, cars, you know, airplanes, everything that you use, you know, that might have memory in it. And those guys have already been, they've been impacted since Q1, the end of Q1 on DDR4 prices. So I think this is going to have just a huge impact. I mean, I hate to think of the semiconductor industry having a major impact on the overall economy, but it can. And anybody that's been around the industry for a while knows that it just takes one component or one material and it can bring the industry or parts of the industry to its knees. Back in 2000, just a shortage of tantalum for tantalum capacitors brought the data center industry to its knees. I was at Motorola. We couldn't ship anything. We couldn't get capacitors. So this could be a very devastating situation. And nobody wants to see this imbalance. Nobody wants to see everything going to the data center, nothing going to the consumer. Consumers need that capacity. Consumers need the ability to run those applications in both on device and in a hybrid manner. So I'm seriously concerned because I think this puts the brakes on a lot of things that are already underway.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, Jim. I mean, if you think about the dynamic that we've created, especially with on-device AI in the consumer space, yes, that's why these configurations have scaled up in memory capacity. You know, at the edge device level for consumer products is because, you know, folks want to run AI on device. They don't want to go to the cloud as much. You need that for, you know, a myriad of reasons, you know, for certainly for security, keeping your data on your device and not sending it to the cloud, your personal, AI knowledge graph or what have you. And then also performance, latency. It's just faster if you can process on device. So we have this crazy dynamic of, oh, wow, AI's generated all this demand for memory, but our devices need more memory. Now what? And so I'm wondering, what do you guys think a solution might be here? I don't know if we can all kind of get on the three box here. Damien, if you're in the background, put us all on the screen. Yeah. let's get the hive mind going. What's the solution? Build more fabs? That's all I can think of.
Definitely, you need more fabs, but I think in the shorter term, I think we need to look to those lower tier vendors. We need to look to companies like YMTC and CXMT, even though they're Chinese vendors. We need to look to them for capacity, especially for some of those older products, for the DDR4 and stuff. I think that we're at a point where we have to look at this as a global issue, and shutting out the Chinese vendors would be foolish.
Agreed. Mark, no. You have any solutions for us, buddy?
I wish I did. I wish building fabs was a short-term answer, right? And it's not. Well, it's not, right? You don't build a fab overnight.
So no.
you need a lot of overnights to build a fab.
A couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, at least. And but the thing that really concerns me, and I'm sure your inboxes have been flooded with this, I mean, this year's CES is going to be the year of wearable devices, ambient listening devices, very low cost products. And these are coming from companies that are startups. They don't have a broad portfolio, so they can't, we'll sell a lot of this, but we're not gonna sell any of this. A lot of these companies are gonna be one hit type of companies. And the term price elasticity kicks in. You know, and Dell is the master of this, where a $50 difference in ASP could make a significant difference in volume versus people just saying, you know what, I'm going to wait till prices come down, you know, and that's a real, real problem. Dave, you've pointed out very well that the key that, you know, it's kind of a contradiction of terms in that you got the entire PC market, you got the technology industry in general saying, hey, you have to have on-site capability for AI to really have a great immersive experience that has no latency, there's security advantages, yada, yada, yada. And the reality is that to have that kind of experience, you need lots of memory. So that there's a problem with that. I don't think there's, frankly, I don't really think there's a meaningful short-term answer to this, except to make the analysis that, you know, guys like us kind of picking who are the vendors who are likely going to be able to navigate through this mess. And not to say that Dell is going to be perfect the way they navigate it, but this is kind of their DNA. You know, when there's a shortage of, and it doesn't have to be necessarily memory, but for someone who worked at Dell for many years, they do this to a T, and they can pivot, you know, and they can turn on the dime better than anybody else. And that's not to say that Lenovo or HP can't do that to a degree, but when you have most of your volume going through indirect channels, which requires, you know, really, really good forecasting. And again, Dell is the best of what they do in that area. They're going to probably have some challenges. You know, and remember too, is that if you're building, you know, the product that's showing up in retail right now, those products were built 60 days ago. And the fact of the matter is that if you ship that into the holiday season to a Best Buy or to a Costco, for example, and all of a sudden the holidays are over and prices get back jacked up, I mean, all of a sudden that is not a good situation. So I don't know if there is an answer, honestly.
Jim, you touched on something that actually is very interesting, and that's the macroeconomic component here and secondary or tertiary suppliers. So you mentioned Chinese suppliers. What does this do to, you know, the government's, I guess, bargaining chips, perhaps, with other nations that may have memory supply and we need it. Any theories there?
Well, unfortunately, I think the situation we're in with the political situation we're in,
right?
I don't see much budging on by anyone. I think this gives China a lot of leverage to say, listen, we can help supply the industry, but you have to let us, you know, get access to the latest process technology. You have to open up the markets a little bit more. You have to stop doing some of the things that the U.S.
GPUs
and its Western allies have been doing. Mm. So it's going to be interesting because this is another situation where, just like with rare earth materials, I think China has a very, very strong position and they can leverage that for negotiations. Will the Trump administration actually consider that? I don't know. If it starts hitting GDP, I think anything's up for grabs at that point. No government, especially going into even if it's a midterm election, no government wants to show, you know, a down economy going into a election year. So it might create some interesting dynamics. And, you know, the sad part is that a lot of this is based on just government politics. It's not based on the industry. The industry is very good at working together, coming together, overcoming these issues. The roadblocks that we have in place right now weren't created by the industry. They were created by the governments.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say, Dave, just to be the kind of point counterpoint on this, you know, and only because
I don't agree with you, Jim.
Diverse opinions. That's what this show's all about.
There's an old line from SNL that I could invoke, but I will not invoke.
I would love that line.
Jim, you ignorant. No.
Yeah, Jim, no. This is a PG-rated tech stack episode. The
beautiful.
Only observation I would make is that, at least from a political standpoint, that right now there is a tremendous focus on getting inflation down. There were some good inflation numbers this morning. The CPI came in at 2.7 versus 3, at least for November, which is a good sign. And if I won't say Trump, but if the administration is really focused on this type of situation, I really think realism will kick in. And whether it's tariff related, whether it's relief related in terms of, hey, we're going to let China play here when we normally wouldn't do, just to relax prices. Because the last thing that the administration needs right now is 60 days from now or 45 days from now, a government report says, well, the average price of a personal computer went up 15-20%. That is not helpful to the overall inflation number. So I really think at some point that will kick in. And realism, I don't think it's going to be so much a policy thing, because if the administration had its druthers, they would like the world to conform to the way they see things. But, you know, I'm a realist, and I think the administration will be a realist, saying, you know what, especially in the tech space where, you know, again, the notebook market, just to use as an example, it's not like the old days where it was growing 30% year over year. That's not happening anymore. It's growing, but it's not growing certainly at the clip that it used to. But it's still a big market in terms of millions and millions of units sold. The notebook market, just again to use that as an example, is a very much a hockey stick from a volume standpoint. A lot of that volume is sold over the holiday season, and I just have a feeling that reality should kick in. So that's my counterpoint.
Well, and you also have to remember that we talked about consumer, but B2B, you know, a lot of these devices are fixed price contracts. So I mean, they've been bid out at a fixed price. It's very difficult to go back and say, well, we need to increase the price because the components just went up. So that's going to have an impact not just on potentially on prices, but also on a lot of these companies' earnings going into especially the end of Q1 and Q2. We're going to see an impact of this on earnings.
Right. Yeah. Jim, I think you're right. Certainly in the B2B market, a lot of these companies do have very, very sign on the dotted line contracts that mandate certain pricing. Now, some of those contracts as well have all kinds of caveats and provisions. This is, well, you know, if something happens, if A or B happens, you know, we can get a price increase. So it's not always black and white that they're locked into a price point.
or we can cancel.
Yes, which is either worse.
Well, Jim, you don't like the pricing. Exactly. If you don't like the pricing, you don't have to deal with it. Yeah. No, Jim, I think Jim, you hit the nail on the head when you said, as soon as this begins to affect GDP, as soon as Wall Street feels this more significantly, as soon as it makes the needle move in the wrong direction, that's when things get interesting from a policymaking standpoint. I think back to the CHIPS Act and all that, you know, that was going on, the investment in stateside manufacturing. We still need that. You need folks like Micron, I'm sorry, building more fabs, building additional capacity so that we're less reliant on our neighbors for chips. It's that simple. I hope this, you know, will kind of drive things in that direction. I think if there's any silver lining here, it's that everybody is going to be keenly aware of this for a while. We're going to have this shortage going into 26, for the foreseeable future. I'm not sure anybody can crystal ball this right now. And so hopefully this wakes a few people up to say, hey, remember we talked about this stateside manufacturing thing, and it's a real problem. It's a real problem. And Intel, by the way, glad to hear them. And this is a side note. I'll just toss this in there. 18A doing well. Some new advancements in lithography doing well that they're executing the high NA. Now. Yeah, high NA. Yeah, absolutely. EU lithography. So that's all great stuff. We need to keep doing more. So, yeah. Anyways, maybe I'm preaching to the choir, guys, I guess, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I think we have to remember that there are a lot of investments that have already been allocated, like Micron building new fabs up in New York, as well as expanding other fabs in Japan and elsewhere in the U.S. But it takes time. No fab comes online very quickly. It takes 2 to 3 years to build a new fab. Longer if you have to put in the infrastructure for it. So it is a challenge, and that's what's always made the memory market very difficult. Is the fact that, you know, forecasting for that capacity and putting the capacity in place always seem to be moving in different directions. So it's always been a huge challenge. But, you know, especially with where we are with a market inflection point in AI on device and in the cloud, this is a very, very strategic issue at this point in time. I think not just for the industry, but for governments worldwide.
I wonder what this do, and this just occurred to me as you were speaking, Jim. You kind of teased this out. I wonder what this does for somebody like Samsung. So let's say, you know, major memory supplier, obviously on multiple levels, whether it be HBM, you know, they may have missed 4 a little bit, but flash as well, and also a major foundry capability, right? What does this do for folks like that? Like, I would think they'd be in the driver's seat for some foundry deals. And we've heard of, I think it was AMD recently stepped out with some, you know, partnership words, collaboration words with Samsung. I'd have to pull up the headline. I missed it. I read a little bit into it earlier this week. But any thoughts there? And any major players we should watch that'll come out of this better than others?
You know, once again, I think you're better off looking at the other memory vendors than you are looking at the foundry guys, because, I mean, 10 years ago, you could have said, yeah, we can switch some of that capacity from logic in the foundries to memory. You can't do that these days. The memory industry, whether you're talking about NAND or DRAM, has very unique processes. So it's very difficult to switch from one to the other. And you have to remember, that especially on this high end that's driving all this, this transformation or this dichotomy in the industry right now, that requires the latest process technology in the world. Yeah. And that's really, really hard to duplicate. So I unfortunately, I don't think there's no Band-Aid. There's no easy way to overcome this issue.
Good point about logic versus memory cells, very different sort of manufacturing. Go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
Yeah. I would just say, and I know we're coming up on time here. The thing that I'm most concerned about, frankly, is how the startups, and we're going to see a lot of this at CES. These companies that are I call them one hit they're not one hit wonders, because that kind of implies that they have a successful product and they exit the market. But a lot of these wearable devices, products that have very low price points, $100, for example. I'll use an example. You know, I've gotten a flood of examples. There's a lot of companies now getting into the smart thermostat space for food, cooking food. It's wireless. You stick it in a steak and, hey, by the way, I have a smart
app. My Chef IQ, yeah.
Yes, I have a Chef IQ. But there's a number of other companies that are getting into that category.
Yeah.
There is memory in that product. There is storage in that product. And yeah. and the reality is that even if you move the price point, the cost up $5 or $10, a company that is trying to get off the ground is not going to absorb that in margin. What they're going to do is they're going to increase the price point from $100 to maybe $130 because you have to layer on top of margin and dealer margin, et cetera, et cetera. And I can tell you, as an old Extel guy, you know, it's all about price bands and elasticity. And there's a lot of companies that would, a lot of consumers that say, you know what, for $99 or $100, yeah, I'll go out and buy that. But at $130, yeah. And what scares me about that, it doesn't allow these startups to get out of the gate. And especially with some of these really low cost devices that have a great value proposition, but the pricing may not go along with it, it's going to be a challenge. And we're going to see a lot of that at CES.
So possibly an innovation stifling component to this as well, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Wow. It could, yes.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. You know, I mean, it sounds a little doom and gloom here, guys. I think, you know, I'm tend to be a little bit more positive disposition in general, you know, in the mindset. And I think you guys are as well. I hope we can figure this out. We don't have
you're only positive because the Patriots are in the playoffs. That's the only reason why you're well, come I on, mean, let's face it.
It certainly doesn't hurt now. It doesn't, Mark. But no, it's one of those things where the industry is going to have to pull together. And I think that's the attitude that we need to have in this thing in general. You know, get the teams together. Let's keep solving for this because the genie's out of the bottle. AI is here. It loves memory. It loves storage. And there's not a whole lot we can do with it, you know, about that. So good stuff, though. Well, gentlemen, thanks for your insights. I wish we had more solutions, but I think that what I took away from this was watch the major players, look at the dynamics, be aware, forecast, think about alternative solutions, and hopefully we'll pull out of this in the not too distant future. We'll see.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely plan going forward and brace for shocks.
Plan for the worst, hope for the best. That's exactly all you can do. So, and with that, gentlemen, I think we'll sign off for today. Folks, as always, please hit thumbs up and subscribe if you would so that you get notified when another episode of the Tech Stack happens. We will probably be wrapping up some things towards the end of the year, or maybe we'll shift into CES gear and give you some live coverage from the show there in Las Vegas. All boots on the ground here. All of us will be in Las Vegas running around like crazy people. But make sure you hit thumbs up and subscribe so you get notified when the next episode of the Tech Stack airs. And until then, happy holidays and thanks for joining the Tech Stack.